Iambic Audiobooks presents Every House is Haunted by Ian Rogers, read by David Lewis Richardson. The Vestibule. Aces. Suelle got kicked out of school for killing one of her classmates. They couldn't prove she actually did it, which was why she received an expulsion instead of a murder charge. But there was no doubt among the faculty that she was responsible. Suelle told me she didn't care if they kicked her out or put her in jail. She just wanted her tarot cards back. At dinner that night, I asked her if she wanted to talk about it. Our parents should have been the ones dealing with this, but we hadn't seen them in 4 years.
Talk about what?
Suelle snapped.
Tara Denton is such a baby. I read her cards wrong on purpose. She wasn't really going to die.
But she did die, I pointed out.
Yeah, because she ran in front of a bus.
So you did predict her death. Suelle tilted her head to the side and gave me a long-suffering look as if she was the older sibling and I was the younger.
We all predict our own deaths, Tobias.
Nice. Where did you get that? She frowned.
Ghost Whisperer?
Why don't you tell me what actually happened? Suelle blew a strand of her straggly blonde hair off her forehead and dropped her fork on the plate with a loud clink. She was going to be 16 in August, but she still had the mannerisms of a young child. Most people grow up. Suelle was growing inward.
It was algebra, and I was so bored I could die. I was feeling fidgety, so I took out my tarot deck and started shuffling it, practicing some of those fancy shuffles you taught me. I started snapping cards down on my desk, maybe a bit too loudly, I admit. And Tara, she was sitting beside me, started giving me these dirty looks. I shot one right back at her and asked if she wanted to play. Do you know what she said to me? She said, "I don't gamble," like she had never seen a tarot deck before. What a zero. Anyway, Mrs. O'Reilly put some big complicated problem on the blackboard and said she had to step out for a few minutes. I heard she's a drunk, so I figured she was heading off to the boiler room to get juiced. Robbie Moore said he saw her in the parking lot one time and...
Suelle.
So the teacher left, and I turned to Tara. She was kind of pissing me off at that point. I snapped down a few more cards, some of the trumps, and I said, "Do these look like playing cards to you, sister?" I was expecting Tara to say something smart, but she surprised me. She actually picked up the cards, one at a time, and looked at them. She asked me what they were, and I figured, what the hell? And I started explaining what tarot is. We weren't bonding or anything. I was still thinking she was a twit. But she seemed seriously interested. I could tell because she looked kind of scared. She probably heard some of the rumors about me that are always floating around.
I nodded. Go on.
So I asked Tara if she wanted me to give her a reading. I told her she had to ask me to do it, or else it wouldn't work. I don't think that's true. In fact, I'm pretty sure it isn't. But it sounded kind of occult, sort of vampire-ish, and she seemed to eat it up. By then, a few of the other kids had gathered around us, and Tara must have known it was too late to back out. So, she started acting smarmy, telling me to play her cards and read her future, or am I too scared? I didn't like that. First, she says, "Play her cards?" Right after I told her they weren't playing cards. And she says it in this joking tone, not for my benefit, or even hers, but because we had an audience. Then, to top it all off, she asks me if I'm scared, which I found doubly insulting since she was the one who was actually afraid. But then I figured out what the problem really was, what her problem was.
Suelle paused for a moment, possibly to take a breath, more likely for effect.
I realized she wasn't scared enough.
So that's what you did, I said. You scared her.
I don't care if people disrespect me. They can say whatever they want about me. They can write it on the bathroom walls. They could write it in neon on the front of the school, for all I care. But tarot isn't something to be laughed at. The cards don't like it. They told me so.
Uh-huh. So, what happened?
I dealt out her spread. Then I sat there for a while staring at her cards, looking like I was concentrating really hard on them. I knew the longer I took, the more agitated Tara would get. So I started her reading, her joke reading, I might add. It wasn't real. I made it up. I just wanted to take it down a peg, and in front of all the jerks she was trying so hard to impress. I put on this serious expression and shook my head, telling her I didn't like what I saw. I began asking these medical questions, like if there was a history of heart problems in her family. Is her father a smoker? Stuff like that. Tara started getting freaked out. I had her cards laid out, face down, and I was flipping them over, one at a time. The first card I turned over slowly and smoothly, barely making a sound. But each one after that, I started snapping them louder and louder. When I flipped the last one, a card I slipped to the top of the deck on purpose without Tara noticing, it sounded like a gunshot, and Tara actually jumped in her seat. She was really scared, Toby. That last card was death. Which, as any self-respecting tarot reader will tell you, doesn't actually mean death, but change.
I would say death is a fairly big change. Suelle's shoulders twitched in a small shrug. She was tall for her age, and tended to slouch, which gave her the appearance of someone expressing perpetual indifference.
Tara wanted to know if I was making it up.
I told her I wouldn't do something like that.
I told her that the cards would turn back on me if I read them incorrectly. I'm pretty sure that's bull too, but it didn't matter because Tara wasn't listening anyway. She stood up and started flapping her arms like she had to pee or something. She was breathing really fast and looking all around the room. She looked at me with these big saucer eyes and asked how she was going to die. Then I realized why she was looking all around like that. She was seeing death everywhere. I told her I didn't know how she was going to die, that the cards weren't that specific. Maybe she'd slip in the shower and break her neck. Or maybe she'd get kidnapped and chopped into little pieces.
Or get hit by a bus, I added. Suelle shrugged again.
Or that.
Then what happened?
Some of the others were trying to calm her down. They tried to get her to sit back in her chair, but she pushed them away. She started saying something really fast. I didn't understand all of it. But I think she was worried that one of the chair legs was going to break and she was going to fall backwards and fracture her skull. She started moving down the aisle toward the door, turning around and around. She bumped into Jack Horton, who was just coming back from sharpening his pencil, and she started screaming at him, accusing him of trying to kill her. She was absolute Looney Tunes. She started spinning around, pointing at the chalkboard, the globe, even Blinky, the classroom iguana, screaming about death, death everywhere. Then she ran out of the room. Nobody followed her, but some of the others went over to the windows. A few moments later, we saw her come running out of the school and into the street. The buses were just arriving and...
Suelle drove her fist into her palm.
El smacko!
You sound real broken up about it.
Tara Denton wasn't my friend. She was some twit I sat next to in algebra who believed too much in tarot. I didn't like her, but I didn't kill her.
And yet you got kicked out of school.
They'd been waiting to do that for a long time,
Suelle said, with a noticeable lack of resentment.
Ever since the school mascot drowned himself.
Right, I said. Because he thought he was a real shark? Suelle shrugged.
That's the rumor. Seems to be a lot of rumors at that high school,
I mentioned.
Most of them about you.
Would it kill you to make some friends?
I don't need friends. Just my brother.
She gave me her NutraSweet grin, full of artificial sweetness. I remember the day when I became an adult. It was 4 years ago. I was 18, and Suelle was 11.
I'd just graduated from high school. My student co-op at the paper mill had turned into a full-time job. I drove a forklift. The hours were long, the work monotonous, but it was union, and the pay was decent. I wondered if it was possible to do this kind of mindless labor for the next 30 or 40 years without developing some sort of psychotic disorder. I was thinking about getting my own place and finding a girl to take back to it. One day, I came home from work and found Suelle sitting on the porch swing. She was drinking an orange crush and reading one of her Anne of Green Gables books.
"Mum and Dad are gone," she said.
"What do you mean they're gone?"
"They're gone."
She took a sip of her drink.
"I went out walking this morning, and when I came back, they were gone."
I looked over at my car, sitting in the driveway, parked behind my parents' station wagon. "Where did they go?"
"I don't know," Suelle said. "I thought they went visiting, but they haven't come back."
"Well, that's it then. They've just gone over to the Mullins or the Heaths. They'll be back." Suelle lowered her book and gave me a patronizing look.
Mom and Dad haven't gone visiting in years, Toby. Where have you been?
I was beginning to wonder that myself. I felt like I had been away much longer than 7 hours, more like 7 years. I left Soel on the porch and checked the house from top to bottom. There was no sign of our parents. No sign that they had suddenly packed up and left, but no sign that they had been dragged out of the house by force either. No sign of anything at all. It was like there had been ghosts haunting the place rather than flesh and blood people who had once lived here. My memories of them felt hazy already. I didn't feel scared or frantic. I felt angry. I don't know why I felt that way, and that made me angrier. Where the hell could they have gone? Why would they leave me alone with Soel? I called the police, and they searched the house. They talked to the neighbors. They asked for phone numbers of our other relatives, but we didn't have anyone we were close to. The police came to the same conclusion I had reached hours earlier, that our parents had left the house seemingly of their own volition, but with absolutely no evidence of having done so. Their belongings hadn't been disturbed or removed, and their luggage was still stacked in the crawl space. The neighbors didn't recall seeing them leave the house, nor did they report seeing any unusual people in the area. Time passed. Days turned into weeks, and I kept waiting for a social worker from the Children's Aid Society to come and take us away. Soel and I would be placed in a province-run care facility until adequate foster homes could be found. They would try and keep us together, but there were no guarantees. We would eventually be passed off to different families. Over the next few years, Soel and I would exchange birthday cards, Christmas presents, the occasional letter. But eventually, we'd drift apart. Until we finally forgot we even had a brother or sister. It was stuff shitty made-for-TV melodramas are made of. But it didn't happen. The social worker never showed up. I thought maybe Soel and I had slipped through the cracks, as so many kids are supposed to do. If you believe the news magazine shows, the truth was much simpler. They didn't come because I was 18 and working. The mortgage was already paid off, and I was bringing in enough to cover the bills and keep us fed. I had grown up without realizing it. I was an adult. Soel had a reputation as an unusual child even before she started school. My earliest memory of an incident, which was what our parents called the strange things that happened in Soel's presence, occurred when Soel was 2 years old and I was 9. We were in the backyard, Soel playing in her turtle kiddie pool, me sitting on a swing set that I was already too big for. I was bored out of my skull. I had been tasked with keeping an eye on Soel and making sure she didn't drown herself in 14 inches of water. Something caught my attention in the farmer's field that our property backed onto. I don't recall what it was. A deer, maybe? I wandered over to check it out, and when I came back, no more than 2 minutes later, the turtle pool was gone. The pool wasn't very big, but it was a painfully bright lime green that stood out on a parched yellow lawn like a radioactive spotlight. Still, it took me a moment to realize it was gone. Part of that was because Soel was still right where I had left her. Blonde hair in a ponytail, decked out in her My Little Pony bathing suit, and sitting in the spot where the pool had been only a moment ago. "Soel," I said, "where's the pool?"
"It's gone."
She was crying and slapping at the ground, which was turning muddy from the hose that was still spraying out water. "Where did it go?" I was thinking, some kid must have come into our yard and taken it.
"It went away."
There were tears on her face. I remember that because she wasn't the kind of kid who cried very often. She raised her hands, the hose still gripped in one of them, and sent a spray of water into the air. I actually looked up then, half expecting to see a green turtle-shaped pool floating in the sky over my head. Of course, there was nothing there when I looked. But I saw plenty of other strange things over the years since then. After Soel got kicked out of school, she started disappearing most nights. I'd be walking past her door on my way to bed, and more often than not, her room would be empty, the bedsheets neat and undisturbed. She was always back in the morning, acting as though she hadn't left, and although I questioned her about it at first, she always gave me the same reply. "I was just out walking." After a couple of weeks of this, I started going out looking for her. Silver Falls isn't a very big town, but it still took me a few nights to find her, walking barefoot along the banks of the Black Creek near the Cross Street Bridge. She was wearing her nightgown and looked like an oversized child.
"What are you doing down there?"
I called from the bridge railing.
"Oh, I'm just looking around,"
she said, her arms held out to either side, walking along the water's edge, one foot stepping in front of the other like she was walking on a tightrope.
"What are you looking for?"
I spoke in a low, harsh whisper. I didn't know why I bothered. We were on the edge of town, almost into the woods, and there were no houses nearby. Even if there were, no one would have thought anything of it, not if they knew it was so well. She giggled and disappeared under the bridge. I swore under my breath and went around to where the embankment slanted down to the creek bed. Soel was staring up at the underside of the bridge. I tried to see what she was looking at, but it was too dark. I asked, "What are you doing out here? Don't you know it's after midnight?" Soel shrugged. "I'm looking for dead bodies." I wasn't sure I heard her right. The creek was very loud under the bridge.
"Did you say
dead bodies?" Soel gave a small nod, still staring upward. "I watched a TV show about police psychics, the kind used to track down dead bodies. They said most bodies are found in the vicinity of water, lakes, rivers, ponds. I got to thinking about it and realized I've never seen a dead body before."
"And that's a bad thing?"
"Sure. I don't like the idea of not experiencing all that life has to offer."
"So you decided to go out in the middle of the night and look for dead bodies?"
"Yes."
"Anyone in particular?"
"No, anybody will do."
She giggled.
"Anybody will do?"
I hesitated, picking my words carefully. "You realize how messed up that sounds." Soel turned and looked at me, and I felt a momentary pang of terror. Then her brow creased in puzzlement. She was looking at something above my head. I looked up and saw something hovering there, a small, white rectangle.
"What?" Soel touched my arm, startling me. She was standing right in front of me now.
"Give me a boost."
I hunched over and laced my fingers together. She slipped her foot into the cup formed by my hands and I hoisted her up gently. I tried to crane my head back, but it was all I could do to keep from dumping us both into the creek.
I looked over at the dark water churning by. There was something strange about it, something I hadn't noticed earlier. I couldn't be sure, it was too dark, but I thought it was flowing in the wrong direction.
"Got it,"
Soel said. I lowered her to the ground. She was holding the white rectangle in her hand, flipping it back and forth between her fingers.
"Now this is exciting," she said.
It was a playing card. The Ace of Hearts. A few weeks after that, I came home to find Soel in the front yard, holding a leash. She was dragging it back and forth across the lawn like she was walking an invisible dog. I came over and saw there was a collar on the end of the leash. It was red with the words, "My favorite pet," embroidered on it.
"Dare I ask?"
Soel smiled. "I went down to the store to get a chocolate milk and the guy behind the counter called me a witch."
"He said that?" I said skeptically. "Right out of the blue?"
"Well..."
Soel hesitated.
"I asked him if he had seen any aces lately."
"Any aces?"
"Like the one I found under the bridge. I'm looking for the rest of them. I thought he might have seen one of them around. That's when he started looking at me funny. He said he recognized me and that people were talking about me."
"So, what else is new?"
"They've always talked, but no one's ever called me a witch before."
"And what, you're worried they're going to burn you at the stake?"
"No, of course not. The guy in the store did say he'd call the cops if I didn't leave, though. He was a real asshole." But it got me thinking, what if he did call the cops? How would the police deal with a witch?
"I think they shoot them on sight," I told her.
"But they use silver bullets." "That's for werewolves, you nerd."
"What does it matter? You're not a witch."
"People in town, they're just..." "Yes?" "They don't know what to make of you." "Maybe I am a witch."
"You're still young. You can be whatever you want."
Soel shrugged.
"Maybe I want to be a witch."
"A witch who looks for aces sounds like a wise career choice."
"Thank you."
"It still doesn't explain the leash."
"Oh, this."
She held it up like she didn't even know it was in her hand.
"This is for my familiar. I figure if I'm going to be a witch, I'd better start acting the part."
"You're already acting the part," I said. "That's why people think you're a witch."
Soel nodded thoughtfully.
"Touche."
"That's touche, you nerd." So Elle started dragging the leash with her everywhere she went. This went on for about 2 weeks, and then one day, I noticed her without it. "Give up on the familiar?" I inquired.
"No,"
she said, smiling brightly.
"I already found one."
"Oh, he's been living with us for the last week, as if you didn't notice."
"I'm afraid I didn't."
Soel turned her head to the side as if hearing something I could not.
"Oh,"
she said.
"You can't see him. Only I can."
"What happened to the leash?"
"He doesn't like wearing the leash. He said it was degrading to his person."
"He actually said that? Degrading to his person?"
"Yes. The Haxan Paxan is quite sophisticated. He's going to help me find the rest of my aces."
"The Haxan Paxan," I said. "What's that, a zebra or something?"
"It's a name."
Soel rolled her eyes at me.
"And I wouldn't make jokes about it. The Haxan Paxan doesn't have a sense of humor."
"Sounds like he's a lot of fun at a party." Soel glared at me.
"I'd watch that."
"Ah, the Haxan Paxan. How he made our lives so very interesting." "Soel, I told you to turn off the TV if you're not watching it."
"The Haxan Paxan's watching it."
"The Haxan Paxan is watching Canada's Next Top Model?"
"He likes it. He says the models remind him of himself."
"Soel, did you leave the back door open?"
"The Haxan Paxan did. He went outside to do his business."
"Well, can you tell him to close it when he's done?"
"You don't tell the Haxan Paxan to do anything."
"Can you ask him then, pretty please with sugar on top?"
"Toby, do you remember what I said about being funny?"
"Soel, do you know anything about the Conroy's minivan getting smashed up last night?"
"I'm afraid not, Toby. But on a side note, the Haxan Paxan doesn't like minivans. And he doesn't like the color lime green. He finds it offensive to the senses."
"Uh-huh. The back door was open again all night."
"The Haxan Paxan was out."
"Doing his business?"
"No, silly. He was looking for aces."
On an unseasonably warm Saturday in March, I was outside on the porch swing, reading the paper when Soel came skipping up the cobblestone path. "Hard day at the office?" I asked.
"Look what we found."
She was bouncing around and waving something in her hand. It took me a moment to figure out what it was. A playing card. The Ace of Clubs.
"The Haxan Paxan was the one who found it, actually. He's very smart."
"Where did you find it?"
"Mrs. Ferguson's bird bath."
"Mrs. Ferguson?" I pictured an old woman who lived alone, with her pet Rottweiler, an animal she could have thrown a saddle on and ridden around town.
"You went into her backyard?" "Duh. That's where her bird bath is."
"What about Kramer? Wasn't he outside?" Soel flashed me a wicked grin.
"Oh, he was there all right. But one look from the Haxan Paxan, and his fur turned completely white."
"Uh-huh."
"Yep. Then he ran round the side of the house and we went over and got the card."
"Aces?"
"That's right."
She winked at me and skipped up the porch steps and went inside. I was picking up my paper when I heard the porch steps creak. The front door swung open, on its own. Then, closed again. "Just the wind," I thought. Soel called me from a payphone and told me I had to come over to Mrs. O'Reilly's house.
"Who?"
I asked groggily. I had been asleep. I looked over at the clock radio and saw it was 2:30 in the morning.
"Do you know what time it is?"
"It's not important. You need to get over here now."
"Who's Mrs. O'Reilly?"
"My algebra teacher, duh." Soel gave me the address, but the house turned out to be easy to find. It was the one on fire. A pair of fire engines were parked out front, blocking off the street. Firefighters ran hither and yon, dragging heavy canvas hoses. A group of rubberneckers stood off to one side. Soel was among them.
"What the hell's going on?"
I asked her in a low voice, so others wouldn't hear. "I didn't do it," Soel said immediately.
"The Haxan Paxan did."
"There is no Haxan Paxan."
"The Haxan Paxan doesn't like it when..."
I grabbed her roughly by the arm.
"Stop it, Soel.
This is serious."
"You're telling me?"
She nodded at the house. The firefighters had stopped running and were staring at it too. The flames were green. "So, you're saying you didn't burn down your algebra teacher's house because she was the one who confiscated your deck of tarot cards and got you expelled?"
"Ex."
"What?"
"She was my ex-algebra teacher. I feel the need to have that stated for the record."
The record.
You're not on trial, Soel. Really, you could have fooled me.
You said the Haxan Paxan did it.
That's right.
But there is no Haxan Paxan.
I wish you would stop saying that. It makes him very angry.
Was the Haxan Paxan angry at Mrs. O'Reilly?
No. I guess you could say he was angry on my behalf.
And that's when he burned down her house.
I don't control the Haxan Paxan, Toby. He knew I was upset, and I guess he just took it out on her.
Well, that's just aces? No, Soel. It isn't aces. It's the exact opposite of aces. I got a phone call from the guy who owned the convenience store. He said Soel was loitering around outside, and if I didn't come down and collect her, he was going to call the police. I realized this was the guy who started all the witch talk. He sounded terrified. As I got in the car and drove over, I wondered how he got our phone number. Soel wasn't there when I pulled into the strip mall. I parked and went around back to where the dumpsters were. I found her writing on the brick wall with a piece of pink chalk. She was drawing squares, one next to the other, one stacked on top of another.
What the hell are you doing?
What does it look like? It looks like you're tagging the back of the store.
Tagging? Oh, Toby, you're so street.
She snickered and kept on drawing.
And it's not graffiti. It'll wash off in the rain.
Then what are you doing?
Testing a theory?
She said vaguely. She drew one final square, then walked back to where I was standing. She handed me the piece of chalk and walked further back, toward the screen of trees between the plaza and the lake. She stopped on the grassy verge, turned around, and suddenly ran full tilt at the wall. I started to call out, but she sped past me, arms pumping, brow furrowed in concentration. At the last moment, she leaped into the air, throwing her legs out in front of her like a long jumper, and landed on the wall.
And stuck to it. She stood frozen there, in a half crouch on the wall. Then slowly, she began to stand up straight, or rather sideways. She was standing in the middle of the first square she had drawn. She hesitated a moment, then hopped sideways and landed on the next one. I tilted my head trying to watch her, but it was disorienting. It was one thing to see her defying gravity by sticking to the wall, but it was quite another to watch her hop up and down in a sidelong fashion. It was like watching someone walking up the crazy stairs in an M.C. Escher print. It wasn't until Soel reached the final square and turned around and hopped back that I realized what she was doing. Playing hopscotch. Things quieted down a bit after that. Soel didn't do anything too weird, and there were no unusual occurrences in town. It was a textbook Silverfall summer, hot, quiet, and uneventful. September arrived, and the kids went back to school. October came, and the leaves started changing color. Everything was still quiet. I started to think maybe it was just a phase Soel had gone through, like puberty or something. I thought about getting her back into school, or at least helping to get her high school equivalency. On the one hand, I was surprised I hadn't received a summons from juvenile court. On the other, it was just another example of how removed Soel was from everyday life. I had asked Soel what she wanted to do with her life, and she told me her first priority was to find those last two aces. I told Soel we'd have to work on that, but until then maybe she'd like to help me rake the leaves. I told her to get started while I went down to the hardware store to buy some paper leaf bags. As I was coming out of the store, I happened to look across the street at the people lounging around in Orchard Park. They were all looking up at the sky. I went over to see what was going on. I tried to follow the collective stare, but I couldn't see anything. Then I saw it, something small and dark floating high above the trees. It looked like a black balloon. Everyone was talking in low, excited voices, some of them pointing. An old man, holding a bag of breadcrumbs he had been using to feed the pigeons, was shaking his head and saying, "It ain't right." "No, sir. It ain't right at all." Whatever it was, it started to come down closer to the ground. It bounced back up, then came down again, lower this time, and I could make out what it was. Soel. She was wearing a black dress and black shoes, part of her witch's wardrobe, I assumed.
As I watched her descend lower, one of the shoes slipped off her foot and fell into the park fountain with a splash.
"Heads up!"
she called down in a giggling voice.
"Soel!"
I shouted.
"Come down from there!"
I felt absurd saying those words, like I was only asking her to come down off the roof.
"Are you kidding?"
she hollered back.
"Do you know how long it took me to get up here? I've been working on this for weeks. Get down, right now! Don't be such a drag!"
She swung around in a lazy turn and started coming down lower. She brushed the top of one of the tall elms and called out,
"Oh, wow! Be careful!"
She came floating down to the ground, looking like a gothy version of Mary Poppins, sans umbrella. The people in the park ran away, some of them screaming. "This can only end well," I said, watching them scatter. Soel waved a dismissive hand.
"They're just jealous," she said. "Forget them. Look what I found at the top of that tree."
She passed it to me. The Ace of Spades. The van showed up the day after the levitation incident. I knew something was coming. There was a tension in the air, the kind that reminded me of the wet battery smell before a powerful thunderstorm. I was in Soel's room changing her sheets. Not that there was any sign she actually slept in her bed those days. I was just going through the motions of a normal life. I was putting on the pillowcases and staring at the spider that built a web outside Soel's window every spring. The web it had made this year was bizarre, to say the least. It was all over the place, for one. It was coming apart in places, and in others, the webbing had been spun into strange, almost geometric shapes. I was watching the spider running madly back and forth when the van pulled up. A white van with no markings on it except a plus sign on the side. Sort of like the Red Cross, only black. A man and a woman got out, both dressed conservatively. The man in a dark suit, the woman in a skirt and jacket ensemble. They looked like Jehovah's Witnesses. The man was carrying a briefcase, but I didn't think there were copies of the Watchtower inside. I reached the front door just as they were knocking on it. "Hello," the man said. "My name is Walter Rand. This is my partner, Leah." He motioned to the woman behind him without taking his eyes off me. "May we speak with you?"
"About what?"
"You have a sister."
It wasn't a question. "May we see her?"
I turned my head and looked into the living room. Soel was sitting on the floor amid a drift of our father's old National Geographics.
"What for?"
she asked gruffly.
"This won't take very long,"
Waldo assured me.
"And it won't hurt,"
he added to Soel, who didn't look convinced.
"Just have a seat here."
He gestured to the table in the dining room. Reluctantly, Soel came over and took a seat across from Waldo. His partner, Leah, stood in the doorway, one hand resting on her hip, fingers tapping against a bulge under her jacket. "Do you have a lot of friends, Soel?" Soel stared at him for a moment before answering.
"No, I don't need any."
"Not even an imaginary one? Someone only you can see? Do you have one of those?"
"Yes,"
Soel said slowly.
"Is he or she in this room right now?"
Soel made an effort of looking all around her. Then she shook her head.
"She's burning hot,"
Leah mentioned in a strangely casual voice. Waldo took out a folded piece of paper, unfolded it, and put it down with a pen in front of Soel.
"Can you draw me a picture of him?"
Soel stared at the paper, then raised her eyes up to Waldo.
"The Haxan Paxan doesn't like to be drawn, does he?"
he said. Soel shook her head.
"Have you ever played with tarot cards?" "You don't play with tarot cards. I've never seen anyone shift like this before,"
Leah said in a low, awe-filled voice. She raised one of her hands towards Soel, fingers wavering slowly back and forth.
"I'm surprised she's even visible."
"Leah," Waldo said curtly. He turned back to Soel.
"Have you ever used tarot cards before?"
"Yes."
"A girl died," I mentioned.
"I didn't kill her. She ran in front of a bus."
Waldo held up a calming hand.
"It's okay. We're not here about that."
"Then why are you here?"
Soel snapped.
"We just have one more question."
Waldo cleared his throat. "Have you
ever played? Have you ever used a Ouija board?"
"No,"
she said emphatically. Waldo let out a deep breath. He wiped his brow and looked over his shoulder at his partner. She crossed her arms and leaned back against the wall.
"Thank God for small favors," she said.
Waldo stood up and led me into the kitchen.
May I call you Tobias?
I nodded.
Tobias, your sister is... Please don't say special. I was going to say dangerous.
That's awfully frank. Waldo frowned.
I'm afraid I don't know any other way to be. It's okay,
I told him.
It's just unexpected. I've become sort of used to covering up for your sister,
Waldo finished.
Making excuses for her. We know, Tobias. We know all about it.
What do you mean by that?
Soel is having an adverse effect on reality. She's out of phase. She's not supposed to be here. I'm sure you've noticed some unusual phenomena while in her presence. People and animals acting strangely, unusual weather, apports.
Apports?
Objects that appear seemingly out of thin air.
What kinds of objects? Waldo gestured vaguely. Like playing cards? I suggested.
Sure,
Waldo said. Small objects, usually. Soel's been finding playing cards, aces specifically, around town. She's become intent on finding them.
Aces?
Leah said, coming up behind us. Yes, I said. She found one under a bridge. Another in a tree that she was levitating over at the time.
Levitation?
Leah's gaze drifted away for a moment, then came back in force, boring into me.
Has she found them all?
No, she's found three of them so far. Leah turned to Waldo and said,
We need to move quickly.
Waldo cleared his throat and turned to face me.
Tobias, we have a man in our employ, a psychic. He has the ability to see the future in his dreams. He lives in one of our most remote stations in Lhasa. That's in Tibet, the roof of the world, they call it. We have him there because the high elevation causes people to dream in extremely vivid detail. It makes his ability that much more potent.
What does this have to do with Soel?
This man,
Waldo said,
he's been dreaming of her. In those dreams,
Soel destroys the planet.
She's not supposed to be here,
Leah muttered.
Where is she supposed to be?
I said. Tibet.
Waldo shook his head. It's not important. All you need to know is that she can't stay here. He reached out and gave my shoulder a firm but comforting squeeze. Tobias, your sister needs to come with us.
Soel didn't put up a fight. In fact, she wanted to go.
I have to widen my search, she said. You understand?
Sure, I said. You could have filled a barn with all the things I didn't understand at this point. I offered to help pack her stuff, but Leah said it wasn't necessary.
We'll get her new clothes,
she assured me.
We'll take care of her.
Waldo shook my hand and thanked me. I didn't know for what, but I said,
You're welcome.
Anyway. Then they stepped outside to let me say goodbye to Soel.
Take care of the Hexenbaxen for me,
she said. He's not going with you?
Leah says there's only room for me.
Too bad.
Yeah, but at least neither of you will be lonely.
I nodded. Be good, Soel. She gave me her NutraSweet grin.
I'll try.
Then she did something she hadn't done since she was little. She kissed me on the cheek. Then she was gone. I watched the van drive away. The plus sign on the side was gone. In its place were three wavy lines. I didn't know what that meant. One more thing to add to the list. After a while, I went upstairs. As I was passing Soel's room, the door slammed shut. I tried to open it, but it wouldn't budge. The door still doesn't open, and I haven't been in her room since. No one ever questioned Soel's disappearance. I never called the police, and no one ever came around asking about her. I think it was more than just the town being glad she was gone. Maybe she really didn't belong here. I heard from her only once. I got a letter. It was postmarked from a town in Mexico, some place I couldn't even pronounce. It contained two items. One was a color photograph of a Mayan pyramid. On the back she had written, I found it, Toby. It was here all along. The other item was a playing card.
The Ace of Diamonds.